So how do you introduce your son? And how do you, in fact, set the scene, knowing full well that, you know, he's an ambitious guy, and knowing full well you don't really want him to outshine you. So I have a couple of rules here. Number one, there will be no applause at the end of the next talk. Okay? When Mark went to school, and he was about 3 years old, and the lady wanted to see what was his communication skills like and so forth. And so he sat there, as all 2 and 3 year olds do, and the teacher said, "Mark, what's the weather like outside?" And this little 2 or 3 year old said, "You know, the sun is shining in my garden. Well, I hope, as you listen to the next speaker, that he will make your sun," you notice the pun, "sun, shine," because the sun has shone and he has made the sun shine in my garden. You there, Mark Pierce Lyons? The sun.
Quite a Chinese thought for a three-year-old. "The sun is shining in my garden" probably meant a lot more than just the weather. Quite an interesting thing. I'm so excited to be here to talk to you about Zhongguo, the Middle Kingdom, China, this fascinating country, this place that's really impacting the entire world. I've had an interesting life. Not probably a normal life, and one that had a lot of opportunities. The last guy you saw, many of you know, and you live in 70, 80 different countries. And that's because he spent his life traveling around to go see you, which was great, but really the only way to see him, therefore, was to go with him. And that was the great opportunity I had as I traveled around the world, oftentimes on my holidays, to go visit customers, go to business meetings, which I actually thought was great fun. I've been able to see the world, and I can say it's a great place, an amazing place. I often say to people, I grew up in an Irish home that happened to be in Kentucky. So right off the bat, there was an international aspect to our lives. When my mother would answer the phone, we knew immediately if the person was Irish or the person was American from the change in her voice. When she would say, "We're going home," it meant we're going to Ireland. Je visitais Belgique, donc quand j'avais 10 ans. Et après la France, ich habe gedacht, dass ich möchte Deutsch lernen. Und ich bin nach der Schweiz gefahren. Und dann danach habe ich gedacht, nein, das wäre besser, in Deutschland Deutsch zu lernen. Luego, tenía la oportunidad de visitar Ecuador. Y vi por la primera vez el continente de Sudamérica y todas las posibilidades que tiene. After finishing my degree in Chicago, I went to Scotland. I hope many of you visited the brewery. I think we had 1,000 people at the brewery. I think they were expecting about 500 of us last night. That brewery, in a lot of respects, wouldn't be there if Pierce Lyons hadn't tried to get me into Alltech by buying a brewery so I would go study brewing in Scotland. Very clever man. Después de mi maestría, fui a México. Empecé a trabajar en Alltech. I ended up in Canada, having to put my work to one side and focus on finishing my PhD in Inga Russell's house. I got to experience all these different cultures. Alltech Queria construir a fábrica maior do mundo de levedura. E eu tinha a oportunidade de passar 5 anos visitando o Brasil, o país que realmente vai ter um grande impacto em nosso futuro em alimentos. After all of this, I returned to America. I worked on our biorefinery project, our farm of the future, and I got to get involved in sales and marketing. Very, very exciting time. So after all of this, I thought, I know Europe, I know South America, I know North America. And at some stage, this story has to include Asia. And if you're going to go to Asia, you need to go to China. Alltech has big dreams, big ideas, and big targets. All of us have those dreams, and I hope after the last 3 days, some of your dreams are renewed, are inspired, and are even bigger than they were when you got here. To get from where we are today, we must think differently. And that's one of the things that we did when we brought a program that we run, the President's Club, to China. We had run this very successfully here in our home in Kentucky, bringing the top CEOs and presidents here, showcasing what we knew, what we had to offer. And we brought that program to China, and it was incredible, the interest, the excitement. We doubled the numbers that were in the program. But all of us had this terrible knot in our stomach, everybody who was there. What am I doing in China? Is it the right thing? Do I have the right strategy? Do I have the ability to take advantage of this great opportunity? These are Alltech's champions. These are our vice presidents. But the interesting thing is, when you think about this, a global company, 78 countries with offices, 128 countries where we sell products, we live in a fourth of the world. We live between Kentucky and Italy. How can we really grasp all the things that are changing, all this great growth of population, all the opportunities that are out there, if we don't know the other three quarters of the world? Who will go? Who will take that challenge? Well, I'm here to set the story straight, because I've heard the gentleman who introduced me say a number of times, I sent Mark to China, and he went. Well, what really happened was, we got back after the President's Club, we traveled back separately, we had these great Friday conference calls. All of Alltech gets one message from Dr. Lyons, an incredibly powerful thing. I would highly recommend using this in your own organizations. After the conference call, I asked my cousin Aiden and my father to come into my office. I think it's the only meeting we've ever had in my office. And I said, I'm going. I'm going to China. So I went. And when I landed, I told the Chinese, I'm here to learn.
China, the world's most populous nation, recently hosted the Olympic Games for the first time. Traveling backwards through its 5,000 years of history, the country has persevered and reinvented itself through centuries of turbulence. China was once the world's center of science and civilization, renowned for its art and culture. Much of the world's trade traveled the Silk Road. China's GDP has been the biggest on the planet for 9 of the last 10 centuries. Since the Open Door Policy began in 1978, China has made great strides. The changes over the last 30 years have been nothing short of astounding. Over the last 12 years, we've seen a dramatic rise of new urban residents equal to the population of two Mexicos. An increase in the middle classes equal to the population of Germany plus Italy. And an economic expansion equal to the size of Russia and India combined. China has exceeded many world benchmarks. China's growth from the world's number three car market to number one took less than 3 years. Six of the world's 10 busiest container ports are in China.
That's a very powerful quote there. We always overestimate the change in the next 2 years and underestimate the next 10. This place, China, is full of excitement. It's full of opportunity. It's full of mystery. It's awe-inspiring, and it is extremely diverse, far more diverse than any of us have any idea of. It's incredible. The different cultures, the different ideas, and the different wants and needs that this market has. Western history and the way we learn history in the West is about facts. We know when the French Revolution was. We know when D-Day was. That's how we think about history. China has 5,000 years of history. And I've often asked my Chinese colleagues about different things in Chinese history that I learned in school. And they may not necessarily know those facts and figures. But what they do is every single day, they live out those 5,000 years in their culture. Those 5,000 years have built their culture and built their society. When the Chinese burn their clothes around Chinese New Year, after Chinese New Year, they are looking forward, not back. And this is an incredibly powerful and incredibly important aspect of the culture. Always forward-focused. China is so big, so immense, that it seems isolated from the rest of the world for most of its history. China is different. And when you go to China, one of the first things that people will say to you is, "We are different. This is a different market. You must think differently. You must adapt." But for us, to really understand the culture and the country, perhaps we can use some tools. Maybe we need to think about China in a different way. Maybe China is made up of a bunch of other places that we know, places that we're familiar with. Every single country I've lived in, I see a little bit of that in China. There's places that are like Europe. There's places that are like Japan. There's places like America. There's places like India and Africa. And Argentina. It's such a big place, such an incredible country. And I think one of the big challenges is we call it one name. We lump all of this in together, all of this diversity, and it makes it very difficult to drill down and really understand what's happening. Do we know these places? Do we know this country of 1.3 billion people? Last year, China had cities, 160 cities, over 1 million people living in them. Incredible. Europe only had 25. Last year, by 2025, 65 new cities will have exceeded this 1 million person population. Absolutely astounding. I'm constantly going to cities that I'm expecting to be relatively small, that have airports the size of O'Hare. 6, 7, 8 million people, and I've never heard the name of the country, of the city. Incredible place. These megacities will also start to develop. 24 new megacities over 5 million, and the government is very, very focused on this. They know that they can't have Shanghai, Beijing, Guangzhou all grow double in size again. They have to develop these other cities. China will be the largest economy in the world, as it was before. The question is just when. And if you go on the internet, you'll see everything from 2020 to 2050. It's unknown, it's yet to be determined, and that is our opportunity. What are all these names, all these places? These are the provinces of China. And the distances that we travel when we're there, is this a country or is this a continent? Do we know these cities? Can we get access there? Can we understand them? When I look at Beijing, I think of Chicago and Washington, D.C. put together. I think of Shanghai, I see the big city feel of New York and the glamour of L.A. Incredibly mixed cultures and mixed ethnicities there. A fascinating place. The multiple faces of China. The Chinese are predominantly one group. 94% of the Chinese are Han. There's 52 other minorities that make up that 6%. So we would think this is a pretty homogeneous group. But if you travel north, south, east, west, central China, you will see the differences in food, the differences in culture, the differences in the people. And that 6% is two Irelands, which makes us feel even that bit smaller. But the opportunities there are for everyone, as I'll talk about a little bit later. China is so diverse that Alltech could have made a different decision when we decided to talk about two children. We could have picked Bei Bei, a young girl living in Guangzhou, a big city in southern China, and Dodo, who lives in Heilongjiang, his father works on a dairy farm, having totally different experiences, totally different lives. That's how diverse this country is. We've learned a lot about different dynamics, things that are going on in the world. The life expectancy changes in China are really going to change the country, I think in a much more significant way than we realize. China is the only country in the world with growth over 8% that has a population older than 34 years old. This is going to be a big factor in China, as we have 200 million people over 65 by 2020. We've all seen the numbers, we saw the video, the great excitement, the growth of the Chinese economy. It's on the way up. But what we can definitely see each day, and we don't need to measure, is the impact of China. China is now back. China is going around the world. Xi Jinping, the Vice President of China, who will be the next leader of China, visited many countries. And I think there's a very interesting aspect within this. Latin America, North America, Europe, Asia, Middle East, all this year, all thus far. Why is he doing this? He's making connections, he's building relationships. And interestingly enough, the place he spent the most time in North America was Iowa, a place he visited in 1985 to learn about agriculture. And that tells us something, doesn't it? That agriculture and food is very important to China. The place he spent the most time on the whole trip was Ireland. I was at the Irish ball on St. Patrick's Day in Beijing, and a number of people asked me, "What was he doing there?" "You must know, Mark." And what we found out is, he said, all the dairy products, all the agricultural products, all the food you can produce, we will take. And the image of Ireland, and indeed the image of New Zealand, is very, very high in China. The consumers trust the brands of those two countries. And there's massive opportunities to be grasped in that. And that's because the GDP is changing very, very quickly. These consumers are going to want different things than their fathers and their grandfathers. Many times we talk about how we will feed China. And I like to turn the question around about how will China feed itself, because that is what's going to happen. It's going to have a major impact on the rest of us. Chinese food is very, very diverse, as I've mentioned. And that's come through the history. That's come through good times and bad times. Times of famine, times when people wanted to celebrate, incredible diversity of sauces and different types of cooking. In the food session, we talked about how half the world's food is wasted. In many respects, China has already figured that out. But consumers globally are becoming more and more similar. They want different things. They want choice. They want variety. They want health-enhancing foods. They want natural and fresh. And a big portion of the Chinese population wants this. And a growing portion is aspiring to this. Food safety and food security are major issues. If you get the China Daily, you can get it on your iPad. I've never seen a big country with as many articles about food. Every single day, there's something on food. And it's because it's a top priority. The government has to have food supply. There has to be enough food. We see it in our grain prices, the number of times the Chinese, overnight, containers and containers, ships being purchased and being shipped out, shipping corn, shipping DDGs, shipping soy to China. Food safety is top of mind for much of the population, but food cost is still a big issue. 1.3 billion people is a big number. 900 million of them really have to think about food costs and live on an incredibly low amount of money per day. That will change, but that is still with us for the next little while. We learned a lot about purpose, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more this morning. And this issue is no more important, there's very few places it's not more important than in China, that a company has society's interests in mind. It's no problem making profit, but you have to be thinking about society. They want companies that stand for something, that stand behind the quality, that stand behind their brand. And they don't have a lot of trust in that because of the issues that have occurred. We know meat consumption is going to increase, and sometimes people ask about these numbers. There's a big part of that population that's not consuming meat today, and they will in the coming years. But interestingly enough, dairy will surpass pork as the predominant agricultural product that is consumed. China has 7% of the world's arable land for 20% of the population. And just as we've heard about Brazil's ace up its sleeve, water, China will find some difficulties in this. They have a fourth of the water that most of the rest of the world's arable land has access to. China produces almost 5 billion broilers a year. Agriculture is a top priority and contributes over 10% of the GDP of the country. And it employs almost 40% of the population still. And if we compare that to other countries, where we've seen major reductions in the number of people in agriculture, it's astounding. Twice the number of people of Brazil or India, 40 times more than the US or the UK. Alltech put out a global feed survey last year, and we saw that 873 million tons of feed is produced. And for the first time ever, We reported something unique, that China is now the biggest feed market in the world. And what this doesn't include is the massive amount of on-farm feed that is still made. This number is going to go up and up and up. The industry is still growing 8-10% a year. Food safety, as I mentioned, is the number one concern. And it's because of the number of scandals, the number of issues that have come out. And that's why China, this push for efficiency, this push for production, and this pressure on food safety is supporting large farmers. I know many of my American colleagues would think this very strange. A lot of the pressure in this country is to go small, local. How can I have something that's almost artisanal for my food production? China is doing the opposite. On the dairy side, dairies over 300 cows are getting government support. Smaller than that, they don't get any. It's pretty astounding. Because this is a moving target. A growing population, a population that's changing, dynamics, moving very, very quickly. Speed in China is something that is extremely difficult to explain. And there is a certain amount of food that China will import. It may end up becoming a very significant amount of food. Not just in terms of the percentage, maybe we talk about 10%, but 10% of China's food is enormous. That will have a massive implication in two ways. One, overall, our food prices, maybe the profitability of many of our agricultural sectors. But the impact China will have on the development of Africa and the development of India is very significant. Because if they don't produce food efficiently, and if we don't help to do that, those places may lag behind in terms of their development. So when we look at the outlook, 2020, 2050, some of the wild cards that are listed include Chinese priorities. If Chinese priorities change, if China said they would like to have a biofuels or an ethanol industry, the whole dynamics of the world would change. Chinese imports would determine global profitability. If you look at the U.S. poultry industry, the Thai poultry industry, the Brazilian poultry industry, everybody is talking about exports. Exports will drive our profitability. This is the thing we need. We have many people from those industries here today. And I believe there's many things occurring here. Brazil and the U.S. are the only countries that I believe can produce the volume of poultry required at the right price. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens. What I'm seeing is Brazil is winning in this situation, and they're winning for one very specific reason. Brazil has 60 plants that have been approved for Chinese importation. The U.S. have none. Zero. I thought this was quite extraordinary, and the exciting thing about this job is I get to talk to people who probably know about this in this country, and I get to go over to China and talk to people there and ask them about it. And then I get to look at statistics. Direct imports in 2009, the U.S. is exporting chicken, 20% of its chicken is going to China. Last year, 3%. 3% directly exported to China. Incredible, incredible shift. Why did that happen? So I asked some of our American colleagues, I asked some industry contacts, and they said, politics, regulatory issues, blah, 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 blah. And I went and I asked the Chinese, and they told me a story. They said, when the Chinese government wants to know something about poultry, they ask their poultry industry. And their poultry industry said, the Americans, we don't know them. We made an agreement. They never came to see us. We would never think of a Western government turning around to its own indigenous industry to ask for this type of thing. It's relationship. The U.S. poultry industry needs to get together and needs to go and visit China, build the relationship, Guanxi is much more than relationship. It's a long-term thing. The first time you come and see me, you're a stranger. The second time to come and see me, you're a friend. The third time you come, we may do business. This is China. It's not about price. It's not about volume. It's about something much, much more. So incredible potential collaboration opportunities. So, what has Alltech done? I guess I am pretty naive that when we went in 1994 at Christmas to China, I thought we were on a holiday. And it turns out we weren't. It turns out we were starting Alltech China. We visited the sites, we saw the place, it was incredible. But this guy here, he was doing something else. He had an agenda. And 18 years ago, he set up Alltech China. We collaborated with a university in Beijing. We met a lady named Lan Lo. He's a very good friend of ours. And now we have Alltech's third largest market. Growing very, very quickly. 60% growth last year. Very exciting, incredible team. Lots going on. But are we successful? Liu He is the largest feed company in China. We did their case study with our Asian team. And one of our Chinese colleagues said, 1994, Liu He starts. 1994, Alltech starts. One's an $8 billion company. One's a $600 million company and a $35 million company in China. What's going on here? Are we thinking the right way? So you have to, as you go into China, determine what is success for you. You must define it. And that's the challenge in front of us. How do we grow? How do we grasp this opportunity? So I asked our team, I said, I'm going to get this great opportunity to talk to this incredible audience. What would you say to them? What one message would you give them? If you were up here presenting, what's the thing they need to understand about China? And the culmination of all of these ideas, I kept coming back to the same thing. What you should do everywhere, you must do in China. Many of the things, the way people do things in China, is top class. You should build relationships before you try and talk to a customer and sell them something. You should listen to their problems before you try and flog a product. You should make sure you respect people and you align your priorities. Relationship is the first piece. Henry Kissinger, over 50 years ago now, visited China, a secret trip, a much heralded trip, and it laid the foundation for Richard Nixon's visit the next year. And a lot of the steps that ended up opening up China and creating this relationship. But that trip that Kissinger took was not the critical piece. It was the 50 trips he took back to China. That's what made the difference. That's what allowed all of this growth and this relationship that has developed between the US and China. Trust. He was able to build trust. And that is the thing, as we look at China, we must do first. If we say we do something, we must do it. We must build understanding of our message and our values to the Chinese, and we must understand theirs and adapt our messages. And from that, you can actually create a brotherhood. Leadership is critical in China. The structures are very clear. You need to understand the top management. Need to get to know the leaders. We have a friend here, Kun Pricha, and he gave us these musts. And unfortunately, I went to see him and he added another one. And he said, the leader must be involved in the business. You must own your own technology. You must have your own management style and your own culture. And you must have good people. And I said to our Chinese team after the first 3 months getting to know them, I said, guys, we've got that. And I went to see him. And he said, Mark, there's a fifth. You have to learn Chinese. So that's my big challenge now. But leadership is so critical in China. The don'ts. Don't hit and run. Think long term. Be there. Put some skin in the game. And definitely don't think it's easy. I see so many people coming into the country seeing all this opportunity. Wow. Meet them in the hotels. Oh, my first trip to China. So much potential. The gentleman said to me pretty quickly as I arrived, he said, Mark, anything is possible in China, and everything can be difficult. Incredible place, but we have to be there and we have to be committed. Align with social needs. Again, that purpose, that importance of that. And why is that? Well, it is because it's Chinese culture. It's also because half the companies are somehow owned by the state or have some alliance with the state. Are these Chinese state-owned companies more like government or more like business? You obviously have to adapt your style to understand that. But if you're going in the direction of society, if you're doing things that are good for society, you're in the right place. Align your priorities and align the priorities and motivations of your team. If your motivations are not aligned, you will have a lot of trouble. And we see this when we talk to a lot of foreign companies, having turnover problems, having motivation issues. And when you actually look at the alignment of those priorities, they're not there. I went to a conference at MIT on supply chain management a few years ago. And you can imagine most of the people there were from electronics or IT, and they were all complaining about China. They said, oh, we went to China 5 years ago. They gave us a great price. We closed down our plant. We moved our R&D headquarters there. And then 5 years later, they've come out and they're competing against us. And it was such an incredible thing to me because I just thought, what are you talking about? You gave the whole company away. You didn't bring any value. What did you have? And you lost the whole point. I've never seen a people who have such ingenuity that can look at something, reverse engineer it, and improve it. They don't copy. They improve. And the number of cases that you see with companies, going over, send over the lawyers come back with a report and say, actually, we should partner with those guys because they're doing a better job than we are. That's the opportunity. And if you don't have a relationship and if you're not there, you'll get confused and you'll make the wrong decision. Respect. Respect is a critical thing. It was amazing the number of, I think every single email I got back for my question from the Chinese included that word respect. So I'm going to tell you a story that's a long, long way from China. This is a basketball court in New York City called Rucker Park. If you don't have respect, you're not getting on that court. The guys that play here are really good. Street ball, this is tough. This is tough stuff. And one of the guys that went there and grew up in New York is named Stephon Marbury. He had a little bit of a rocky NBA career. He started out as this phenom. People were talking about him from 14, 15 years old. He went to Georgia Tech, had a good one season there, and goes to the NBA. And he had a lot of frustrating times in the NBA. And his nickname was not Marbury, it was Starbury, because everything was about him. This guy now lives in China. And he says he can't recognize himself from before. He has changed completely. And with that, he's had success. His team won the Chinese basketball title last year. But what is much more important than that success is what's happened to him and his relationship with the Chinese. He credits his success in his personal life to the Chinese culture, filled with love, compassion, and care. It's a very different message than we typically think about when we think of China or we see the information that we see in the media, in the press. And he went to Weibo. This is the Chinese version of Twitter. And he's so popular there that they built a statue of him. He's only been there for 2 years. The guy's phenomenal. Totally changed his perspective, his attitude, and that's what it's about. Get to China, leave your preconceptions aside, embrace the place, and respect the culture. He's interacting, he's traveling around the country, he's doing a lot of great things off the basketball court and bringing cultures together. Mianzi, face. We talk about face, we talk about respect. Very, very critical thing when you're going into China to understand that you have to make sure you respect everybody. You might be able to bully, you might be able to make a decision, you might be able to do something that has some short-term gain, but you have to respect everybody involved. Again, something we should all do everywhere. People talk about localization. We talk about Yum China a lot of times at these conferences. We had Joaquin here a few years ago. It's a great story about localization. But I came across a different one. A Chinese company bought Volvo, and they sent over their executives, and they said, look, guys, the first thing you got to do, Audi is killing us. They're killing you. Now they're killing us because we bought you. They came out with this model of car. It's the L class. It's longer. You need to design one. And the Volvo engineers said, no, 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 we can't do that. The driving experience, the feel of the car, this is Volvo, safety. The safety will be all messed up. And one of the guys sat there calmly and he said, have you ever been to China? No. Do you know who buys your car in China? No. Well, the guy who buys your car in China will never drive that car. He has a driver. He doesn't care about the feel of the car. And the space is for him. It's in the back. He wants a television screen. He wants a place to put his things. He wants seat warmers in the back, not in the front. That's localization. And that car market is a fantastic place to watch in terms of how these companies are dealing with this issue. As many companies are doing, they're carving out China and they're saying, this is a different entity. This is a different continent. This is a totally different market than anywhere else in the world. Clarity is a key piece. Be very clear and direct. Ask questions. Ask questions of your team. But don't ask what you should do from your team. Because you, as the leader, must be clear. Asking a question of them, of what you should do, might be weakness. The secret to China, as Joaquin told us, clarity, relationships, decision-making. You must be able to make decisions in China, and there's a number of companies really struggling with this. The corporate headquarters is on the other side of the planet. They realize China is very important. They say, report everything to us. And you have documents and documents and documents flying across cyberspace and no decisions being made. This doesn't work. There's three layers of management when you're working with Chinese companies. You have to work with the purchaser. You have to work with the sales in whatever way. You have to convince the technical people. But ultimately, there's one decision maker, and that's the top guy. That's the top management. They will make the decision. They'll turn to their technical people, their purchaser. They'll get the nod. They'll look at you and see if they trust you, and they'll move ahead. Decisiveness and clarity is the key piece for these opportunities. We're all walking around now with these phones in our pockets and the incredible, incredible things they can do. When Steve Jobs said, I want a screen that doesn't scratch, he went to one of his best suppliers. He said to them, this is what I need. They said, well, we need forecasts. We need to do a study. We're going to need to talk to the government and look at the regulatory aspects. We're going to have to do a lot of work. We'll get back to you. So he got on a plane and he flew to China. And the Chinese said, oh, we thought you might come. We built a factory. It was already built. They were ready. Have to be ready. You have to move that quickly because that's how fast these opportunities are moving. That's why we put in our local production, and that's why we protected our technology. owning our own technology. The factors for purchase, we always think about price when we think of China. But there's actually three other things that come first. Consistent quantity. Can you produce enough for our growth? Do you understand our growth? Can you scale with us? Consistent quality. And an ability to create a partnership. Are you somebody I want to partner with? That has to be the way we approach this. Engage powerful allies. I told Aidan I was going to China. Dr. Lyons had already challenged him to help support that market. Incredible to get somebody like that. Somebody who can talk about poultry production, talk about pork production, talk about anything in agriculture from anywhere around the world. Powerful ally. You find those people that can help you, and you monopolize their time. I walk around on the weekend in Beijing, and I see a lot of foreigners, Lao Wei, walking around, and their special skill when you talk to them is Chinese. I speak Chinese. And I always say to them, you know, there's 1.3 billion people in this country that have that same skill. That's pretty cool. That's not going to work in China. You've got to be the best, and you've got to be at your best, and ready for your best. You have to find your differentiating factor, and your differentiating factor is your experiences, it's your personality, it's your energy, and your emotion. Zhongguo, China, means Middle Kingdom. It means the place that the Chinese believe everything will come to them. Everything will come here. If it's worth anything, it will end up in China. They're expecting the best. And they're wanting that help and that support and that partnership. But an interesting thing, I think particularly for the Americans in the audience, and I don't even think some of my Chinese colleagues had thought about this, when you think of the word for America, Meiguo, it shows the depth of respect that the Chinese have for America. It means beautiful country. A very profound thing when we think about the world we live in today. So, what you should do everywhere, you must do in China. You must respect. You must build relationships first. You must engage with leadership. Align with social needs and social interests. Align the priorities of your team. Be clear. Build trust. These are the key aspects that China has already, in a short time, taught me. And don't plan to go once. You'll get to China. So one of my colleagues said, he said, make sure they have enough money. Make sure they understand they need to be able to buy 3 or 4 or 5 tickets to China, because once they get here, that's what's going to be required. Commit. Extraordinary success awaits you. This is the new New York, New York. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. And I certainly encourage you all to try and do that. For me personally, I think it's a fantastic place, the perfect place for an aspiring global CEO. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed and learned a little bit about China today.